Greetings, friends, or should I say, tervevus ustavat, and welcome to the Grogpod roguelike podcast, where each episode we arrive at a mysterious mountain of a roguelike. We delve deep to find its secrets and eventually get exploded by horrors beyond our comprehension, only to revisit those horrors at the end of your recap episode. I am your Call Me Silmia, host of the podcast, Scott Berger, and with me are my gaggle of homies co-hosts.
Hey, it's Andrew Harshman, Noise Man, today for this episode. And along with us, we've got...
Colin Smith. I don't have any finished words for you. I'm just a corpse at the bottom of a pool of acid.
Outstanding. And we have a guest.
Yes, I am Tyler Pittman. I am the bottle of poison that you douse yourself with whenever you're on fire.
Excellent. Well,
very important. Very important.
This week we are talking the standard Suomi simulator Noita, released early access September 24th, 2019, and 1.0ing October 15th, 2020. This is a game that you could only find on a PC because that's the only thing that'd be capable of running it at a high level. So you can find it on Steam, Humble, Itch, GOG, the usual places. This was developed and published by Nola Games, who can only really be described as the Avengers-level combination of Finnish game developers, including, but not limited to, the developer from Crayon Physics Deluxe, Petri Puro. And I'm going to butcher all these names, too. I used all of my Finnish pronunciation for butchering the intro. the developer from S-tier puzzle game The Swapper, Olli Harjola. We have the developer from S-tier puzzle game, logical puzzle programming Sokoban game, Baba Is You, Arvi Taikari, Arvi Taikari, Baba Is You, with support from Legend of Grimrock, co-founder,
Legend of Grimrock,
Legend of Grimrock, co-founder Antti Tihonen, and sound design from a guy who worked on Dicey Dungeons and Environmental Station Alpha, Niilo Takalinen, and with the stylish musical underpinnings from Finnish psychedelic funk fusion rock band From Grotto.
See, Scott's been practicing all week for his tryout as the next big Finnish pro wrestling announcer. I'm very excited to see how that goes. Yes, of course. Yeah, there's a full band involved in the development of this game.
Yeah, pretty wild stuff, which we'll get to in a minute. But of course, the super important stats that everyone tunes in and immediately tunes out for. Your average player of Noita has about 106 hours of gameplay in it, and it ranks in on the charts of the number 23rd most popular roguelike game on Steam with 73,976 total reviews.
Wow.
Tyler, as our special guest for this episode, you've encountered a glowing even green tablet that has one sentence describing what one does in Noita on it. What does it say?
The tablet says, Noita is a narrative-free particle physics game that does absolutely nothing to hold your hand.
That seems accurate to me.
I almost feel like Noita is the kind of game that it doesn't even hold your hand. It grabs your hand and just slices it off and says, well, obviously you should have known better.
Well, it pulls you. It's a hand pulling you down into that pit filled with acid.
It's true. There is grabbing involved.
Now, Tyler, I'm curious, you requested to be a special guest on this episode.
Well, I mean, there might have been some pressure. I don't know.
May have been some peer pressure involved, but I'm kind of curious, Tyler, what is sort of your history and background with Noita?
Noita is, it's been on Steam forever, and it always jumps in your face every time there's any kind of sale, and I've always promptly ignored it, just skipped right past it, can barely even see it anymore. But then Andrew's like, hey, you should get on the pod sometime. We're reviewing Noita. So, you interested? And I said, sure. So then I picked up the game. And so I have no background with Noita before. It spawned into existence as soon as Andrew mentioned it.
Yeah, it spawned. Yeah, exactly. Spawned right into existence. It was procedurally generated. Yeah, and so finally we have a guest, and I'm speaking as someone who was a guest on the show at one point, and so I fall into this group too. Enough of these simps coming in. Just oh, they love the game. Rose-colored glasses. I'm talking like rose-colored, you know, like ocular implants. Like we got these guests coming in. We already know. Oh, they love the game. It's their favorite game in the world, et cetera, et cetera. But now we have a guest with a supreme meter of evaluating games. We're gonna get a true opinion from the Pitman here.
So we're not jumping into ratings, are we?
No. Sorry, but I'm just saying.
That was a fast episode. I mean, that's about as fast as your runs in this game will last.
Hey, gotcha. But yeah, Tyler, of course, Tyler Pitman of 900 hours of Hades fame. Tyler is a roguelike expert. Do you have anything to say as to speak to your background with roguelikes at all? Anything you want to mention?
Yeah, so I didn't realize that I was a roguelike fan until I started listening to GrogPod, because I've always kind of been in denial about it. Like, obviously I have tons of hours on Hades and such and played tons of others, but like a new one comes out that's popular and I'm immediately cynical about it. I'm like, oh, look, it's a roguelite game that is also a Metroidvania, and it has pixelated graphics. How to talk about a gimmick. And then suddenly, boom, I have 400 hours on it. So, but yeah, so I didn't realize I was a roguelike fan until I heard all your reviews that I'm like, oh, actually, yeah, I like all of these games. I guess I am a roguelike fan.
That's right. It's taken over the gaming industry, by golly.
Well, yeah, I think this game for me anyway was something where I just kind of sprang up into the ether one day, and I had already put in like a zillion. I had beaten the Swapper. And I was like, oh man, like this is from like the same kind of creative brainchild as the Swapper and Baba Is You. Baba Is You, I'd never really got super into because it like I felt like it was like three digits of IQ above my current level. But I've played some Legend of Grimrock. I've dabbled a little bit with some Dicey Dungeons, and I just saw like this kind of like power combo of like, okay, like big name for the Finnish game space coming out, and it felt like it kind of ticked all of the boxes for me almost immediately. Like, yes, highly chunky pixelated graphics, like weirdness off the chart, your kind of zany sandbox of synergies like you would get from a Binding of Isaac kind of deal, or even, you know, Hades to some degree. And I was like, sign me up 100%. And yeah, like I had put 20 hours or so in before this podcast recording, but I knew like when we started the podcast, I'm like, this is a 100%, like we would be doing journalistic malfeasance to not cover this at some point. And so I deliberately held myself back from like playing it for a long time, and I don't think like my skills in the game had really improved until like, you know, this last 2 weeks or so. I'm like, okay, let's try getting into it. And yeah, there's kind of a lot to unpack here, I think.
Oh, there is. Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah. Noida, more like I do Noida like this game very much. Ooh. I don't like it a lot, but I somehow played it for like 30 hours. So there's a lot I really dislike about this game. But a lot I found very enjoyable. Primarily the main gameplay, the gunplay loop, the way in which you control your character. This is a side scroller, and you are moving around with WASD. You're teeny tiny on the screen. But I don't know what, a dozen pixels high, something like that. And and critically, so you're aiming around with your mouse, of course, and critically, you have the ability to levitate and move around. Like, imagine the controls of like an old-timey like helicopter game where it's just single input and you're like pressing on it to fly a little higher.
You're a jetpack man, except your jetpack is magic.
Except it's magic, yeah, precisely. And it's pretty crisp. It's pretty cool and groovy. And you couple that with some absolutely excellent feedback. Like, I'm talking great particle effects and explosion effects and physics. And it is, if it weren't for this like core gameplay, I would have been over this game in a minute.
That's bad. So I have the exact opposite reaction of like, well, I'm terrible at this game and I basically can't play it because I'm so bad at it and I just die immediately all the time. But it's fascinating to me. All the other stuff is so cool and interesting that I want to play it more because like I have the Steam thing open on the other half of my screen and I'm just watching it loop doing like awesome crazy spells and I'm like, man, what on earth? Like, this is a game, this is part of the game I didn't really experience.
When do I get to do that?
I want to be able to just like spray flames throughout the realm and melt all of the things into gold and rain it on the head of my enemies, or I don't even know what some of these things are doing. But
yeah,
like I love the particle effects physics simulator idea of a game.
Yeah, I think this game's like biggest selling point is its biggest weakness, in that like it is a for the programmers listening to this show, I feel like this game is a gateway drug into linked list programming, where like it is effectively a visual like logical programming language almost, that you are sequencing these kind of spell chains. I mean, you know, once you've built in a couple programs in Noita, then, you know.
Yeah, sure. Well, I couldn't get even Hello World to display in Noita.
Yeah, once you can play Doom on your wand in Noita.
I'm kind of surprised that hasn't been done yet already. But yeah, I think like this game has like amazing looking just flame effects. Like it's billed as a falling sand game, where every pixel is like on fire or freezing or acidic, and boy, do you feel it when you walk around and you see like little smoke particles jittering about. I think like this game looks amazing for its aesthetic that it's going for, because like not a lot of like 2D, you know, it does feel very tropey of like, oh yeah, another pixelated indie 2D side-scrolling Metroidvania, great. Except like this is like Worms on steroids, where
indeed,
every 5 seconds some part of the screen is either shaking or exploding for some crazy reason.
This is
and those particle effects and things, they don't clash with what is a very simple aesthetic. Sorry, what were we gonna say, Tyler?
I said, yeah, and it's all functional too. Like that, mm-hmm. that little bit of smoke physics on the ground that is going to catch you on fire and kill you. Or like it even gets to the point where you can get headshots on those tiny little pixels. It's very impressive.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of the few games where it's not an aesthetic choice to be a pixel art game. Like the pixels are the game. You could not do this in like a 3D weird art style, because it's not an aesthetic choice. It's the game physics.
Yeah. I mean, like the game can barely run on like, well, barely at, I guess, like late game high level situations where like the entire level is like transmuting to gold and falling down and all these particle effects are happening and stuff. Like I was kind of impressed that my Steam Deck could keep up for the most part, but that fan was working overtime, further and further that I got. But gosh, yeah, I like where to even start with
critically, we're talking so much about the physics system and everything. The tagline, the first line of the description on Steam is that Noita is a magical action roguelite set in a world where every pixel is physically simulated. Ooh. And it certainly delivers on that.
Here's a question. Is it a roguelite or is it a roguelike? I feel like it is more roguelike than most of the games we review, in that you start fresh every single time and you die and it's quick and you start over again.
Great.
I mean, it's not a top-down turn-based game, but I feel like it's got the vibe of a true roguelike a lot more than
I'm curious, like, Tyler, from your perspective, like, what's your take on this sort of like torture genre definition?
I consider a roguelite to be anything that has like a meta progression, where you can take material rewards and carry them forward into future runs. And Noida doesn't have any of those. So yeah, I think it's more of a roguelike.
Yeah, I think if to answer your question, of Colin rather, excuse me, Colin had a question. Sorry, I'm mixing up those now. The one thing that's like keeping it from being a the truest of true rogue-like game is that though it's trying hard to not the game is trying very hard to give you absolutely no information. Like we're talking Johnny Tightlips over here, like, oh, you picked up a shiny rock. I don't know what it does. It makes a little humming noise. So in a true rogue, like in Rogue, it's like you pick up a potion and you have no idea what it does. Like you pick up a magic, I have no idea what it does. So like if Noida had a mode, true roguelike mode, where this every spell was a mystery,
My
then maybe it would be a
God.
roguelike, and that would be the only way to make this game eve any more frustrating.
I don't think it would actually be playable
No,
if you
not at all,
didn't
not at
know
all.
what the spells were.
Yeah, and I think that like the core ethos of this game is experimentation, often with debilitating and hilarious when it doesn't happen to you results. Where Andrew was lamenting in the Discord of like, what is this thing I just picked up or this substance here, ambrosia? I have no idea what this thing does. Its description is not super helpful. And like, yeah, that's true. And I think that like, the
But
game.
then, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I think like the game encourages you to like figure out, well, hey, what does this button do? Press the button, and then either rewards you or explodes you and ragdolls your pathetic wizard corpse flying across the map.
Indeed, which critically, I did follow up. I'm like, okay, well, I poured the ambrosia on the ground and I stepped in it, and sure enough, like a little icon appeared, a little teeny tiny icon appeared in the top right-hand corner that said like your defense is up or some buff, right? So it's like, okay, that's cool. So sometimes the experimentation works out. Other times, you're into a good run, you get to the little safe zone between the areas, you craft what you think is a great wand, and you go, well, let me try it out, let me fire it up. And it turns out you've actually crafted, or maybe the game has just RNG dropped for you the wand that kills you instantly, which happened to me multiple times. It's like, oh, I forgot that this this effect wasn't a projectile effect. So the electrical explosion went off in my poor pasty wizardy face.
And I think for the most part, the descriptions are like reasonably clear or give you like
No, I disagree entirely.
I think they kind of give you a hint as to what you're in for. Like when you start the game, you'll start with kind of like your crummy basic spells like a spark bolt or something, and it says a weak but enchanting sparkling projectile, and you shoot it and yeah, it just sparks around, sure. Or like a splitter bolt, a short-lived magical bolt. Yep, makes sense. Versus something like a nuke spell that is just described as take cover exclamation mark. What does that do? I wonder if the take cover is any indication. But it's one of those things that like, if you're listening to this, you've never played Noida before, and you're like, propane tank. Summons a propane tank. Be careful what you wish for. And you're like, what on earth does that mean? Is that gonna just like kill me instantly? Like, and now you're sort of like hesitating about clicking this the cast button. It's like, I don't know if I want to do this actually, but I gotta click it. I gotta see what happens, and then you'll collapse that wave function to find out whether or not if that actually was a good or a bad idea. You'll go to your friend Discord and shout, "OMG, I can't believe this thing blew me up. What else was I expecting from a Giga disk projectile summons a large serrated disk with a curious flight pattern. Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. What else would you expect from a game that has a built-in death replay GIF saving functionality, which is pretty cool, and I very much appreciate that that exists. No, I guess the spell descriptions are not that bad, and they do have like stats, like you can look at like a bunch of gobbledygook numbers that I can't hardly understand. But like critically, it's like, well, here's how much damage it does. Here's how much mana, et cetera, et cetera. And I would have liked a little more. If it was any less, it'd be unplayable. But I guess they barely met the bar of playability for me.
I guess
spell descriptions, and then the potions, they're just totally vague. The random items, totally vague.
Yes, very vague potions like Invisibilium or Flummoxium or Swamp.
Well, you joke, but like Invisibilium, like, I mean, like, I poured it on the ground and like there's the interface is not super clear. Like, am I invisible? Am I not? Should I drink it? Which you can drink potions in this game, by the way, which I didn't know until I Googled around and did a bunch of research. This game demands research. Wait,
how do you drink potions?
You like either right click the item or
threw it on the ground.
I think it's like you right click it from the hot bar at the top, because crucially, I think this is like either impossible or very hard to do on the Steam Deck with the joypad controls, where I'm like, okay, I want to drink this potion of molten steel because I don't know what it does. I better do it. Who knows what's going to happen? Or molten aluminum.
Refreshing.
And your options, at least with the controller inputs, which I will say, like, at first I thought were kind of like awkward, but I kind of grew used to it over time and now feel totally fine to play with. Like, your only options with the gamepad are either to spray it on the ground or to just yeet the potion and just have it like crack and explode. But having those potion jars is super valuable, which I'm sure we'll get to in a minute. But for putting out emergency fires, you'll definitely want something either filled with blood or vomit, or, you know, like your standard game where you're putting out your wizard cape out of fire with fungus blood, as you do in most normal games.
Yes, as Tyler, as you alluded to in your introduction, sometimes when you're on fire and there are no lakes to hop into, sometimes your only choice is to douse yourself with poison, which this is one of the items on my long list of things I really hate about this game, which is sometimes the game spawns you into a new run with a terrible potion. So you start with two wands and one potion, and you gotta have water. You gotta have blood. You gotta have something to put out environmental hazards, either to douse you, to put out a fire in yourself, or to dilute like pools of acid and other dangerous stuff. And sometimes it'll just give you these crappy potions. And it's like, yo, this is, I feel like water should be part of the starting loadout and then another potion, but what can you do?
They need to teach this wizard how to stop, drop, and roll. And I say that as a joke, but also as a real, like, you should be able to like slowly lay down and roll yourself around and put out the fire. Like, water good for running around, but yeah.
Are you saying this very, very Souls-y rogue platformer game needs a dodge roll button?
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. But oh boy, we're getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, we're talking about all this wonderful looking game, the side scroll with wonderful procedural generation. You're traversing, you're crawling through a dungeon, you're trying to make your way to the next area, the next zone, battling beasts, collecting magic items, crafting wands. But to what purpose? What is the Finnish storyline here, Scott?
our story, I guess I'll put it in air quotes, that I didn't actually know existed to this game until I actually sought out, because I had played this game beforehand, and I think this was patched in at a later time, and I had never seen this until maybe like 3 days ago, 40 plus hours in, where if you're cracking open your fresh disc from the store of Noida, you're popping it into your computer, and you are watching for the first time, you hit the new game, and you are greeted with what I can only describe as something like a Finnish creation myth, where the camera kind of pans over the sky. There's no text to any of this, which I think is great. I think like this intro cinematic is very mysterious. It like lasts like less than 60 seconds or something, but it starts with like the view of the stars, and the stars kind of pop in and take the form of some kind of elegant goose or swan of sorts that lays some egg in the stars, cracks apart.
I'm already hooked
at $8 a dozen, and then from that cosmic egg, there's some wispy things that come out, and one part of the egg, there's little wispies and triangles and stars that come out, and there's little mountains underneath it. Oh, is that that must be the world being created from this egg. And then the egg cracks open again, and out of this egg comes these big ugly tentacles and spiky electrical bolts and what can only be described as pipes with I guess valves on them, and it looks like the egg is kind of like dripping ooze. So I feel like we have the kind of two sides of the world creation myth of, oh, the world is created, and along with it all this dangerous grotesque technology, and then the stars come into color and just spell out the title of Noita, welcome. And from that, it very slowly pans down from the mountains. It passes by a little curious rock formation to kind of give you a hint of maybe what's to come later. And it just lands down at the ground, and awakening from, I guess, sleeping on the ground in front of the campfire here at the entrance to this mysterious cave is you. You are a purple wizard with a wand, and you are out for adventure. Go find it. That is your story.
You know, hey, that intro I thought was cool. You walk into the entrance to the cavern system that runs through this mountain that you're going to be descending through. And you've got these little light up runes are coming up on these obelisks that are very elegantly explaining to you the controls. And that is when the explanations stop. I don't know if the game even explains how to like add spells to wands. I had to Google it. Maybe it does. Maybe something flashes up on the screen. And you know, I suppose it's pretty self-explanatory at the end of the day. But I thought perhaps I had D&D brain. I was thinking like, oh, maybe these are separate from like the wands or something. But what do we think of the story? Lack of story. I for one could have done with a little bit more. I think it would have been really cool to like at the beginning of each run, there's like a different constellation that appears and kind of gives a little more context and a little bit. And also, like, every time I picked up a scroll, it was just like, yeah, all right, I can't make heads or tails of this. Like, what's happening?
Yeah, there are, crucially, like, these big, like, honking green tablets that you'll find scattered throughout the world that you pick it up, and it's filled with, like, gobbledygook runes, but, like, they slowly morph into
something less understandable.
It took me a long time to realize that if you hovered over it, turned into something.
Oh, really?
I was just like, oh, I'm just waiting to. I was holding on to them, waiting for them to get translated by some other item.
I think I'm way just back learning in that. I had no idea.
It's you can blink and you miss it.
I think way back in the early access days, it was just the text, and then like you just pick it up and the text is just right there. So I think they've added in that like there's this runic stuff, and then it slowly changes into the language thing. I like that. I feel like it adds like a little bit of like texture and flavor to the world at the expense of like, yeah, it is kind of like obtuse. And, you know, like the stuff that's written on those tablets, like the tablets are kind of like sequenced. I think there's like, I don't know, like 12 of them or something that you can collect, and they kind of spell out like the broader lore of this world. So there is like a very kind of Soulsian story of like, you know, oh, you can go if that's
code for not very good storytelling. I'm sorry to say, a lot of the time, this whole like environmental storytelling, it's like, look, half the time the devs do claim, you know, or supposedly are doing this, it is accidental, and it's because they had a broader vision but like didn't have enough time, or half the time environmental storytelling is Dark Soulsian storytelling is not so great, in my opinion. Just my opinion.
I feel like there's many games where it's just not important. Like the point of this game isn't the story,
right?
It's environmental storytelling, i.e. It's just flavor. It's flavor text.
Sure, you're right. At the end of the day, it's not super important, but like, I don't know, the first like 10 hours where I was, there was this weird bell curve in my experience of this game. It was like, wow, this is awesome, this is great. And then like really nosedived, and then came back up. In the first like 10-ish hours, I'm like, wow, I'm having such a great time. It's so fun. Like, I wish I knew why I was here. That's all.
Yeah, I don't need to know why. I just know that cave exists.
Cave exists. Go down, descend to the holy mountain.
There's no plot to cave diving.
There's maybe like an optional thing that's missing here that I think the original Dark Souls does really well, which is the undead. Was it the undead asylum? Like the tutorial level that's like gated off from the rest of the broader thing of like, you know, you wake up into like in prison and it kind of like spoon feeds you like, okay, here's how to do this thing. Here's how to do this thing. Now let's put it all together with you fighting this like overly like grotesque like super boss that you're like, oh my god, I have like, what, like you're expecting me to do this? And I feel like that's kind of what's missing from here. Like, I do appreciate the very quick turnaround of like, oh, I just died, let me hit new game and just be bam right back in it in like half a second. Very welcome.
It's pretty fast. Yeah, the asylum demon boss fight is every fight in this game. You're just barely hanging on some of the time,
because like in Noida, like you're saying, it doesn't teach you at all that like hey, there are these spells, like the sequence to them is extremely important. You can like manipulate the sequence to them only in certain areas, and like that's your goal. Like, in theory, like the game would be good enough to tell you that without you having to like alt tab, go to Google and then find the Noida wiki to have it teach you that. But yeah, I think it does kind of crucially do that. One thing that I think is maybe like a little bit of a stopgap, which God bless the modding community for this game. One way that I kind of like cut my teeth on how to learn the wand spell logic school was to go into the mod, the Steam Workshop Spell Lab mod, where there's an older version of this, and I think Tyler you'll be excited to talk in a minute about the newer version, but the older version of it crucially has like these spell challenges of like, oh, like click challenge level 1, do like 10 DPS to this little dummy thing. I can do that. Click, 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 click. Okay, now do 50 DPS. And here's like some spells to kind of like, what combination of this stuff are you going to do? And it kind of like gives you hints along the way. And there's like, I don't know, 20 or 30 of these kind of challenge things that ramp up in difficulty. A good idea that I think maybe could have been leaned on a little harder with like an intro or something. Hard to say, but like, I think I wound up going through like half of those and be like, okay, I think I kind of get it with like, this is how you put this spell next to this one to make this big effect going. And then promptly forgot all of it until I was doing more experimentation. But it sounded like, Tyler, that you were trying to get Andrew to do a different version of the spell lab to like learn how all this stuff gets put together.
Yeah, so I kind of followed, my experience with the game was kind of the same as Andrew's, where like, you know, I started on, oh, this is so awesome. And then as I died more and more and more and realized, oh, this game is actually just brutal. I'm not failing the game. It's just, it is this random. I hit that bottom, and then I needed a mod to get out of it to start going back up again. And that's what I found in the Spell Lab Shugged mod. The original version, it didn't load whatsoever. I couldn't get it to work. So I found that one and it worked. Being able to experiment like that was pretty awesome without having to go through, because like, you know, you die all the time, but and that's totally okay. You find some new shiny thing that you don't know what it does, you click it and then you die, you know, whatever. But to get to that point, you have to repeat the first floor. You have to play for like 15 minutes to, you know, accumulate enough gold to get enough stuff to put in your wand and move forward. I found that loop very frustrating. So being able to jump into it with you know, having full control over your spells and stuff like that, that made the game a lot more appealing to me.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. There's plenty of times where you find a cool wand or a cool spell and either you die immediately or you use it like one or two times and you're like, oh, I can see the power of this, but then I got eaten by an acid monster and you won't see that spell again for a couple hours because there's a lot of spells. And especially if you're like, I'm not 100% sure if that was good or not. It was cool. I don't know. I didn't like have time to play around with it. I did not play with a spell lab, any mod or that, and I kind of want to go do that right now, just so I can look at all the other cool spells and figure out, like, what would I have wanted.
And what's interesting is that you can take that spell lab outside of, like, this little confined area, and you can just, like, run. It's almost like a game genie in a way of, like, just running through the game of, like, okay, like, yeah, let's start level one. I think I'm going to spawn this, like, super wand with, like, 40 slots and unlimited mana and, like, zero recharge time, and I'm just going to put, like, all these giga black holes on it. Let's try to stop me now, game. But yeah, like Colin's saying, there's a lot of stuff in here. There are 106 passive perks. There are 422 distinct spells, and there are 184 different enemies in this game, where the spells themselves, it's maybe a little hard to kind of see, but if you get real close to that screen, you look real close, you can see that they have kind of colored borders around them, where those are sort of your guide of spell crafting, where red are your standard projectiles, orange are standard or static projectiles. I just clicked away from the thing that I was reading. you got your static projectiles. You have passive spells that just kind of sit on the wand. There are utility spells. You got projectile modifiers. You have materials, multicasts. And then this whole, like, Greek alphabet of, and, like, music notes and other, like, wacky things that you can come across throughout your travels in Noita-land, that, if cleverly combined, can create stuff of just absolute, like, wild nonsense of power. And I have to say, like, it doesn't take a whole lot of spells to do so. It just takes putting them in the right order. And I think this is where, like, for me, like, the interesting possibility of a space of it just kind of, like, goes crazy, where the first few levels, I think you're not really super focused on, like, grinding enemies, I don't think. Or at least, like, in my case, I was like, I don't really, like, care about getting gold so much. Because later in the game, you're finding so many, they're almost like loot pinatas of wands, where they, like, they have so many slots with so many spells on them. You're like, God, I don't know what to do with this. But I'll keep it for safekeeping. And you'll just be, like, dumpster diving through all these caves, finding junk, and you'll eventually come to the Holy Mountain Shop, where you can then be like, okay, now I am in a safe spot where I can kind of rejigger these around.
A safe spot? Excuse me?
Asterisk.
It is the most dangerous spot. If you accidentally blow a hole.
It is a spot with no enemies.
Also, if you summon one.
Yeah,
on accident.
You are your own worst enemy. We all know this.
That's right, and that's why I famously exploded myself in an electric explosion.
I wonder what happens if you put bouncing stuff on saw blades.
Do not. That is another one of the classic recipes for the wand that kills you instantly. Going back real quick to these mods, like, this is stuff that should be, like, accessible in the menu, or the Holy Mountain used to have, like, a little doorway where it's like, oh, you walk into the training room, the dojo, where you cannot be hurt and you can test things out and have an opportunity to understand and figure out how to build a good wand. Because if someone sat me down and said, all right, hey, explain how, like, the twin spelled or, like, the split spell works, like, I'm not totally sure I would know how to explain it. Like, I'm pretty sure it needs to go on left, pretty sure we're going left to right, and I'm pretty sure it'll just cast the next, you know, the two and the third. But then, like, how that is different from, like, scatter spells, I'm not totally certain.
Well, or, like you can figure... You can figure it out on the non-shuffle wand, but then if you put it in shuffle, like, how does that...
Oh, yeah.
Like, okay, how does it pick its next spell from the shuffle wand list? It's like, I spent, like, 25 minutes just with like, three wands, just switching spells back and forth, trying to figure out, like, exactly what the sequence logic is before realizing that I could just go read the wiki and it would tell me and I wouldn't have to do the work anymore. And that's
which is a shame.
I want it to be able to be figured out. Granted, I think I had it figured out for the most part, but
well, not me.
Still,
not
like,
for this FPS meathead.
Yeah, it was still a lot of like cognitive overhead to figure out like how is this wand going to work? Or like if you're and that's it, if you're in the Holy Mountain and you can actually swap stuff around, it's fine. If you are in the field and you find a new wand and you don't really know what the spells do, and you have to just kind of like look at the spell sequence and figure out how would this work?
Yeah, it's I feel
Yeah.
like there's an interesting discussion point here about like visual, not quite like programming, but like visual like logic puzzles and like how they're constrained. Because I think like the constraint here is like, A, like I don't know how you would do this dynamically, and like the game is already like stretched to its limits already, but like I don't know how you would do this in such a way that like it wouldn't just be like complete visual overload, but like the game relies on the spells being in a horizontal bar. And yeah, like if you have something that's like, okay, cast three spells and then like do like then you put the three spells next to each other, but like, you know, there's no good way to, and I'm reading off this Google Doc that has like this pictorial representation. I'm trying to describe it because radio auditory medium, but like there's no good way to like
Oh no, you got to keep going, Scott. This is like your defense.
Okay, all
You're
right.
back in
You
grad
got a
school.
row, you got a linked list of spells, and each linked list has a pointer going to the other list, and I'm trying to remember all of my stupid interview questions that have been hoisted on me. And now you have to reverse the linked list. Anyway, you have like the power of these spells comes from like them being crucially non-shuffle wands, so that the programming logic matters. Shuffle wands we'll get to in a second, but I think they do have a use for them, although I think it feels kind of antithetical to how the game is designed. And like the sequence of these, yeah, like you do like, okay, a wand non-shuffle that will cast one spell. And you start it by saying, oh, I will actually want to cast three spell, or like do it like a triple spell cast. And the first spell is like a thing with like a trigger on it. The second spell is a thing with a trigger on it. The third spell is a thing with a trigger on it. And that first spell with a trigger does something. Maybe like it splits and it shoots two other spells. So now you're thinking like, well, hang on a minute. It's basically just like turning like this row of spells into like a tree, like a sequenced tree. And like this like grouping makes sense. And I think that like the wand training thing that we were just describing that I just forgot the name of, that despite putting spell
Bell
lab,
Lab.
despite putting hours into it, I'm like, what the hell is that thing called? That I believe spell lab does have a way for you to like visually understand like the wand programming logic. I've never really kind of like cared to get that deep into it. I'm just more like, all right, I'm gonna put like three spells on here and see what happens. All right, now my shotgun has a fire effect. Great. Let's go blast some dudes. Like that was kind of the extent of my like deep diving into like the wand programming. But like you definitely need to know it if you're gonna try to like fight all of the way to the end to the boss. Actually, I'm saying that, but it might not be totally necessary because you could just cast Sea of Lava every time and just grind that way. So
Indeed.
or you just
Well,
get
I.
one wand that just machine guns something. It's got one spell in it and it just cycles so fast that it doesn't matter. Got
Yeah, that's the
six you
other.
got six spark bolts in there and you're just like ripping stuff.
Yeah, the other side of this equation are the wands themselves, where Andrew, you were kind of saying like you wanted more numbers. Boy, you got some numbers on these things. You got like
Oh, it's true.
down to like the 0.01 of like spell recharge time, cast delay between spells, mana recharge rates, mana capacity, all these kinds of things that would just like drive Will into a coma with optimization. I think like this sort of stuff is interesting in terms of like, okay, yeah, you could just have like one or two spells, and if you put it on like a wand that has really good stats, bam, you're golden. And then this is where I think shuffle wands come into usefulness, where yeah, it's shuffled, it's functionally useless from a programming perspective, but if you just put like, you know, six or seven black hole spells on there in a row, you just smash that. Like it doesn't matter if it's shuffled, if it's all the same spell, and then you're just like, all right, I'm off to the race, it's black holing everything.
Indeed. And, you know, eventually I got sort of a rudimentary understanding of wand building and everything, but I'm still very unsure on a lot of stuff. And it is kind of unfortunate that the game basically pretty close to, like, you know, requires you to either install a mod or go to Reddit or what have you. I was fighting that for a while, because I'm like, oh, it's gonna be a really great gaming experience to, like, experiment and have that triumph of figuring things out. And unfortunately, I did not make it very far. And my most successful run barely depended on my wand building skills. Like, I got a couple of wands that were good, and I at least understood them enough that it's like I could make a decision, like, I'm going to take this one, not this one, et cetera, et cetera. Here's going to be my attack order. And thank goodness for my 18 charges of giant firebolt, which is described as the most powerful version of firebolt, and it was one to cast 10 of them at a time. It was sick. So I'd like pull that out, open up the fight with that, and then switch over to like the fungus spore explosion wand that I had, which had infinite charges, and I had taken the perk, which allowed stuff to kind of home a little bit. And it was a very fun and beautiful thing. Once you get cooking in this game, once you get going, this game is a very good time.
Yeah, I think my favorite wands were all the ones that were just even with the ability to create, you know, a wand with like 6 giga nukes or white holes or whatever. My favorite wands were always still the ones that just had a lot of one really simple spell, or just spells that had similar trajectories and stuff like that. You can just run through like it's an AK-47 and just mow everything down. The simple ones. I like those ones the best.
Indeed. To quote Will, there's all these different things you can do with magic. You can freeze enemies. You can make them your friend. Why would I want to do any of that? I want them dead, I believe, to quote Will. I want them dead. And that is very true in this game. And I mean, look, I will admit that, like, hey, it's cool that the game has like depth in the spell system, that like you can like combine these different effects in different cool, interesting ways. But a lot of the time it's just like, get all this, like these crappy, you know, you go to the shop and it's a bunch of crappy spells. Like, I just want the ones that'll get them dead.
And I think maybe a really good way to build this, like, experiment by doing instead of like reading a bunch of text is the daily practice run mode. So what we've been describing thus far is, like, you know, you boot up the game and there's just like the start a new game, the standard Noida experience. You can also do a daily run, which is like the same seed for everyone playing the game that resets midnight GMT time. But you also have a daily practice run, which I think, like, crucially for games like this that have a ton to experiment with, like, and the expectation is, yeah, you're going to die fast and you're going to die a lot. Restarting back to the start kind of feels like, oh, I don't know. Like, do I really want to go through like the same starting level again? I think the daily practice run mode here works really well. And I wish other rogue games of this sort had it, where it will put you in a randomized spot with random items, usually in kind of like a safe-ish place. And it's the same seed. So if you die, you can start it again, like from the same spot. And it gives you like that kind of practice to build up, like, okay, all right, now I know what's kind of coming at me. I can kind of prep ahead of time and see, like, what can I experiment with this time to get a little bit further. And the one that I was doing, I think for people listening 10 years from now, I believe it was the March 10th, 2025 daily practice run, which also, you can set your game or your computer clock to whatever date, and you can play the run from that date. What? I'm pretty sure.
Is it just like so it's not like being published from the internet. It's like a seed, like the time is the seed or something.
I believe it's seeded off of the date from your computer clock. Yeah.
Always good.
so
you could also, what I'm hearing is you could also set your clock forward in time, get really, really good at the daily challenge, and then impress your friends.
Whoa.
If I was smarter, I would have done that instead of like putting all of my daily reports in of like, yep, died to another low-level spider in the fungal caverns again. But the practice run, the one that I had going really well, again, like to Tyler's point, like didn't I wasn't engaging like with the spell crafting mechanic really at all. Like I had picked up this perk that was like when you levitate, you shoot sparks, and then I picked up another perk that was like all your projectiles home in on enemies. And I had the glass cannon perk that was 5 times more damage, but your health is capped at 50. So I was just like standing next to a wall and like levitating, and then the little sparks would fly through the wall and kill enemies on the other side of the wall. And just like all these explosions happening, like, this is great. And then I threw all of my chainsaw spells into a shuffle wand and was like, because you're doing 5x damage, you just like drill, baby, drill all the way through the level. And the jungle took like a whopping 7 seconds for me to just like plow through. And there's like stuff in the level that is warranting exploration. But my challenge goal was, okay, how far could I get? So crucially, I had challenged the other podcast co-hosts to see if they could make it as far as the fourth biome, fourth with an asterisk, the Hisi base. Tyler, how far have you gotten thus far in your travels through Noita land?
Before I just started cheating with the wand hacking, I made it to the Hisi base.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't get past that though.
Otherwise we wouldn't have let him on the podcast. Listeners, don't worry.
Uh-oh.
And what was sort of your experience in like getting that far?
I felt like when I got that far, I mostly kind of scrubbed my way through. Like I just kind of stumbled into the most optimal path to the Holy Mountain. And it's like, oh, well, should I continue to the next floor? Should I grind here for a little while, maybe find a better wand or something? And some circumstance always forced me to move forward, like, you know, being chased by a swarm of enemies or being on fire. And you got to hop into the health pool once you get into the water pool. Once you get into Holy Mountain, done that more than a few times.
Right.
But yeah,
the only water I know of is the pool.
I made it to Hisi base. I don't feel like I earned it, but I also don't feel like I earned a lot of deaths either. So, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it balances out.
Now, my challenge to the co-host of like getting down like a few levels going straight down, did anyone try going left or right at the start? Or yes. I guess by right meaning trying to get up over that mountain.
Wait, you mean the very, very start?
Very start, yeah.
I went through the pool. Ooh. And I found the secret tablet at the end and died trying to swim back out. Does that count?
Yes. That was to the left, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Secret pool. Now, I had a bit like teed up to kick this off. I'm like, God, what the hell is Colin talking about? So your quote normal run in Noita starts you at the surface, this nice idyllic little park area, and you walk in to the mines, or you start with the mines. I think like this game also has a really great like kind of engagement with the physics system of like, hey, here's this little thing here that you can kick, and this mine cart will go sailing down this mine shaft and maybe 50% of the time land on an enemy, and you're like, got it, Noita, that's what I'm here for. So you'll go from the surface, which has some other stuff to explore, let's say. You'll go down into the mines, and there's like some branching paths off to either side. You can go to the left to the collapsed mines, which is a little bit higher risk, higher reward of loot there. Or you can go to the right, where there's this big honking lava pit. And right. if you are if you are blessed enough to have a potion flask filled with blood or water, something that can solidify the top of that lava pit, and you can jetpack across to the other side. There's a little rope bridge that will take you to a little mystical shrine with an orb that will give you some extra health. Am I the only one that's...
You will immediately be killed by the monster, though. If you hang around.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. There was a bridge I saw it, and I was attacked by a monster and killed by it.
Well, I got the Orb of Storm and then died.
Yeah,
and only because you had hinted at this. I don't think I would have found it otherwise.
I remember in the early access days, like the big lava lake was there, and there was it felt like, oh, there's clearly something on the other side of there. The rope bridge wasn't there at the time. So it was another kind of, like, there's this big honking chasm there with the underneath the rope bridge that the bot, again, early access, the boss wasn't there. So the first time I encountered the boss, I'm like, holy shit, like actual jump scare. But this big giant chasm is almost kind of like a level skip where like, oh man, I don't want to go through the mines and the coal pits or the snow or the, again, I just want to get all the way down to the snowy depths. You just trundle across that, that lava lake, yeet yourself down the hole and bam, you're at the bottom of the snowy depths already. You'll miss a lot, but depending if you're trying to do a passive speed run, who knows? That'll get you down to the snowy depths. Between each one of these layers is a holy mountain, which is your quote safe zone where you're not 100% safe, but it's where your shop, you can get more spells and wands and such. After
and you get your health refreshed, of course, crucially, and your spells refreshed and yep, your water.
So the mines, you know, you got some branches there. Coal pits, you have the crucial branch of the fungal caverns, which allow you to, like all good games, go on a mushroom-based acid trip by just eating columns of giant pink weird fungus and transmuting one of the types of materials of the game into one other random one. So in theory, you could phase shift all the rock in the game to gold or lava, depending on a roll of the dice.
Hell yeah, the meaningful randomization I crave.
Mm-hmm. If you transmute everything to gold, could you then mine all the gold?
Yeah, you can get up to some pretty wild nonsense. I don't know how common it is for that to happen, but typically you get under the coal pits to the left, fungal caverns, that will have like some pretty decent wands as well. And I think that's a bigger draw of like, ooh, like there's some really good wands in there. There's obviously like a lot of very dangerous enemies. So it kind of depends on like, am I feeling like I'm on a good roll with this kind of a deal?
Lots of good, meaningful decisions to be made. What a shame Will is has a phobia, a side-scroller phobia. And he's unfortunately not here.
After the coal pits, you'll go to the snowy depths, where I think now the game starts in a way where
oh boy,
the difficulty ouch, just kind of like the, I feel like the difficulty for each one of these levels is exponentially more difficult than the last one. And you start to feel it at the snowy depths. That's when the curve starts going up and you're like, oh my God, like there's these jetpack wearing aliens with guns that up until this point, you're just like, oh, like I was not expecting this at all. Traveling in packs, hunting you down throughout the level.
Snipers.
Did you know that they can follow you back up into the Holy Mountain?
Oh, hell yeah.
if you say, wait, no, I'll just go back to the safety of that safe room. They will follow you and they will kill you.
Yeah, yeah. And as you leave the safe room, it begins to collapse. And that's like a grim portent of what is to come. Yeah, as soon as starting with the snowy depths, the game, this is number six on my list of items I do Noita like about this game, where it just, the game just drops you, as soon as you enter a new biome, it just drops you into a fucking shitstorm. It's just like, there is, everything is trying to kill you. There's explosions going off. After, when you kill enemies, most of the time they're on fire or they're in a puddle of acid, like Xenomorph style. And like, you just have to get into this like rigorous, this very strict rhythm of like shooting things, focusing fire, making sure you're very diligent about finishing what you start. You can't run away because you're going to run into another pack of enemies. And then as soon as you kill something, you have to douse it in water and pick up the gold that it's dropping because the gold will disappear. And like, I mean, this rhythm is, it's very punishing, but it is pretty rewarding. I mean, I got to admit, you know, it can be pretty fun. Yeah, the snowy depths, you got packs of orcs, mercenaries, Martians. What the hell's going on with the enemies in this game?
Yeah, I took the Hisi to be kind of like the protectors of the, like, you have dug too deep. And I got the sense that like from the game's quote storytelling that the mines, like, the first level, like you go down to the mines and like, in theory, whoever was mining were killed by like these glowing red-eyed monsters lurking in the dark, or by like these, well, I guess there are miners who kind of look like they're zombified or possessed, like, you know, hucking TNT bundles at you and shooting their shotguns and everything. And I guess it's kind of unclear to me if those are Hisi themselves or if they're just like miners that have been unlucky in their success for hunting for gold, only to get fireballed from a flaming mage at the bottom of the level. But anyway, you come to the snowy depths. There are jetpack wearing aliens ready to bomb. And there's like tanks with laser sights. Like it is quite a jump up in difficulty. But I think the game is trying to give you a little bit of stuff to go on because like scattered throughout the snowy depths are like big like locked, gosh, I don't know, like capsules embedded in the snow that if you have something that can dig through it, if you got some acid, you got a good digging wand, there's some good loot in there, sometimes guarded by jetpack wearing aliens with guns. But yeah, I think I have found many a wand there. I'm like, ooh, this could be quite useful. If nothing else, just having like a bazillion spells on it that I can then reformulate into something.
Yeah, that's something that's very useful. Something fairly unique about this game is that sometimes you will find loot in the form of a wand, and well, maybe, you know, it's not great now, but you can, like the Grinch, you can take that back to your, you know, lair and repair it and work on it and like add different spells. Like, yeah, maybe the stats of the wand are really good, but you know, maybe you know, the spells are lackluster. So there's something nice about that. It's like you can find, it's not like a, you know, binary thing. This is good loot or this is bad loot. It's like, oh, this could be useful to me.
Tyler, I'm curious to get your take on the music throughout these levels.
I thought the music was really good, actually. Especially when, like, I don't know if they're mini bosses or something, but they would always play this special kind of frantic, zany music whenever a like a mini boss would show up. And you know, I would enjoy the music while I could before I was mercilessly shredded. I enjoyed the music a lot. It kind of reminded me of some of the music from like Terraria, or maybe I'm just mixing up aesthetics. But kind of had like a Relogic vibe to it. I enjoyed it overall.
Yeah, there's a quite a good two-part documentary on the making of the music for this game. I don't know where the third part is. It's definitely not on the From Grotto YouTube page, even though they say that there's like, you know, the making of one out of three. But it's this funk fusion, like psychedelic funk fusion Finnish band that is just like, I think they just did all improv over the course of like a few weekends for the wow. soundtrack to this.
And it's got this very like folk metal without the metal sort of sound, this European folk music, very cool drums and this sort of mystical sound to it.
Lots of twangs and
twang. Gotta have some twang in a good roguelike. So are you saying, Scott, that the music, since it was improv, was just as random as the roguelikes we
procedurally
love?
Generated Finnish folk music? Yep. Yes, I am saying that.
Wow.
And I think like as you progress through these levels, like the music does become it does like change shape into a more kind of like mechanical, like industrial sort of form to it, because as you go down past the underground jungle, which is just a vine nightmare of acid and cannibalistic flowers, you get to the vault, and that's where like, oh, like my wand that could dig through the jungle in 7 seconds doesn't work on all of like the steel can't melt steel beams meme of the vault.
Yep.
This is where I feel like that creation myth thing from the beginning is starting to come into play. Like, oh, it's getting more technological, more like, oh, this is like the badness of the deep underground parts of the world. Instead of like your standard trolls and demons, it's like the menace of technology kind of thing. And you go from the vault with like more technological horrors down to the temple of the art. And I lasted maybe a solid 15 seconds there before I was killed by my, in a typical Noida fashion, by my own curiosity. What happens if I drill into this giant purple crystal? Kaboom!
Oh, no.
Well, then, that solves what that is.
It's worse than that, Scott. Like the kaboom, it then sends out like jets, these like streaking lines of energy that then also explodes. Like you have to shoot it from afar and then get even further away. Like it's pretty gnarly.
But now, is there any cool from the crystals if you do that?
I don't think there is anything to be gotten, as far as I know. But at that point, like every enemy is dropping like a big fistful of nuggets, and it's a good time. So
yeah, for how difficult the game is getting at these stages, like your loot rewards are also getting exponentially crazier, and like the gold drops are also matching the difficulty, I think. But after this final level, the Temple of the Art, you are at final boss time. Andrew, was this the experience that you were describing with the lava?
Yeah, I don't want to get into the details, but the bottom line is your boy got to the final boss. That's pretty cool. And it's quite the dramatic ending. Alas, I died instantly. But yeah, it's the laboratory. Is that what it's called?
I think so. I think. Yeah, I think it's the laboratory.
Good stuff. And there's some kind of item waiting for you. Like, it'd be really cool if I knew what that item was. And it'd be really cool if, like, there was some storyline that I could be like, oh, at last, the magical sphere or whatever. But it'd be really cool if I didn't have to clear space in my inventory and I absentmindedly threw a teleportation potion over my shoulder. And then once the boss activated, I ran into it and got teleported into lava. That would have been really cool if that hadn't happened. But alas, you know, we make mistakes. And after a 90-minute run where I was just creeping along, being so careful and feeling so good about myself and my skill, to get God, unfortunate. Yeah, but my understanding is that, oh, there's a bunch of end game. There's a bunch of alternate modes and runs and stuff. Like any good roguelike, you know, you beat the final boss, but they're not the actual final boss.
Yeah, how much do we want to be spoiled on the scope here? Because so far, like I've deliberately constrained our scope for the purposes of a 2-week book club evaluation here.
I have been looking at the
like 60,000 feet map view.
Yeah, so I guess
all
like
the different pockets that you can dig to.
I'm gonna finish game. We need to respect their measurement system.
So I just posted in the chat here a link. You click that link.
Oh Lord!
Yeah. And it's gonna open up like, oh, this looks like a familiar site. This is the holy mountain with a little bit of the snowy depths here. And if you scroll out all the way out. Yeah. There's quite a bit more involved than just the snowy depths.
Ooh, wow.
Maybe about 3 times as much more than you originally thought.
Oh, mama. Cool.
Maybe 30 times as much. So the
this is a game where, like, you know, one of the pillars of it is exploration. That's and that achievement of discovering a new biome. I don't know how much we want to talk about it.
How far can you fall before it starts hurting you? Is there unlimited fall before damage?
I think there's unlimited fall damage. I think you are free from falling before dying.
There's some pretty long falls in this map thing.
So, like, yeah, I think crucially what we've described so far is a zero orb run of you know, you collect one of these orbs of true knowledge, and they're scattered throughout the world where... I kind of hinted that, like, hey, did anyone go over the mountain at the start? You go over the mountain far to the, I guess I'm just going to call it east, across a desert. There's a big pyramid that has an orb on top of it. There's orbs like all basically in every biome, I guess is the shorthand to it. And your goal to get a different ending here is to go and collect said orbs. And then go and trigger the final boss fight. So if you get any number, or if you get zero to, gosh, what is it? No, yeah, I guess there's kind of two flavors of this ending. One is like, okay, you pick up the mysterious MacGuffin at the end. You kill the boss and you're like, all right, that's great.
Actually, you know what? I might have to step away. I think I'll be playing more of this game. And I don't know if I necessarily want to be spoiled.
Okay.
So I'm gonna pop my headphones off here and I'll wait for the all clear signal of, I don't know, two hands.
Yeah, I'll give two thumbs up.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Tyler, are you interested in hearing the spoiler here?
Yes, I am.
Okay. collecting the endgame MacGuffin after beating the final boss. You'll pick up or you'll be teleported to the final level where you are dropped into a pit of gold and you suffocate on your own gold to death. Now, if you pick up some orbs and you head back up to the top and you go above where the starting mountain area is, there's an altar. And if you have less than 4 orbs, the world will turn into toxic gold. 5 to 10, that'll trigger a new game plus. 11 orbs gives you the pure ending where the whole world turns to gold.
good
gold because you're not suffocated by it. And then your little gold counter goes to an infinity symbol, which is nice. And then if you are skilled enough to go to these 2 other parallel universes in your world, collect all of the 11 orbs from there, go back, and you get the 33 orb ending, it will say the world has been restored and everyone is much happier. And enemies will no longer attack you. It's just a good time all around. So I think, and then there's some extra stuff that you can get off of that, but that's kind of the gist of it. All right, I'm going to give Andrew the 2 thumbs signal here back up, that it is free and clear. You are free and clear to re-engage.
Thank
now
goodness.
That the deep spoilers have been.
And that's how you beat the ultimate mega boss.
All right. And yeah, people are going to think, wow, Andrew must have given it a really good score. But maybe not so much. yes, but I'm back. Apparently I'm invested enough. It's a real love-hate relationship with this game.
Yeah, well,
it's great to hear. Oh, yeah.
When you get to the 300-foot-tall Mecha Noida that you have to fight at the end, then you'll be like, oh great.
Not the Mecha Noida, the secret of Noida is revealed at the end of the game. It turns out Noida was a sled, and basically
North pretty much Angelian.
No, ooh. Well done, well played. Yeah, so it's good to hear that, you know, hey, there's more to be done, which, hey, love that. Love to see it. Mark of a good roguelike is that there is stuff to keep you coming back.
Yeah. I'm just kind of scrolling through my notes here. I don't know if there's any other things that we haven't quite talked about. We've talked about some of the enemies, some of the biomes.
The favorite perk. Mine was the Spider-Man. You get the crazy spider legs.
My God. Yeah. Favorite perks. Good question. I got to think.
I definitely did like the one where like you leave sparks behind. And I think that like there's some of them that seem kind of like useless or stupid at first, where you're just like, this one called Never Skip Leg Day, which just makes your kicks super strong. But you can kick some pretty beefy stuff. And when those things go sailing, like enemies that you thought were like impossible, they'll just like be immediately blown up. I like the one that says personal laser beam. And it's just like kind of the picture of the Noita mage with like a green laser shooting out of its face. Some of them are really good, like Projectile Eater, which will sometimes delete enemy projectiles that are hitting you from the rear. There's one that's just like Homunculus, where a friendly Homunculus will be spawned at every holy mountain. Invisibility, like you'll just be invisible, and like permanent invisibility, that helped me out in a couple Solid Snake moments. But yeah, I think there's unlimited spells is a good one. Worm Attractor, I'm not quite sure how good that is, but like there was one of them where you killed an enemy and then like a rat or two would spawn out of the corpse. And that felt very useful for some of these later levels where there's just like tons of enemies and like, okay, I just got to kill one to like redirect their focus. And then like, I can kind of escape from the situation. Mournful Spirit is a funny one where kind of the same idea, someone will die and then they'll just kind of like leave a little floating ghost that will do chip damage. But there are some that are like straight up good, like fire immunity, explosion immunity,
all great. Yeah, the perks in this game are really good, and should be, the devs should be commended for the amount of them, the variety of them, and like how they are tangible and interesting, and like the leg one or the crazy spider legs, it's like it gives you something like unique. It's not just a boost to stats. It's not just a number change. Not something boring. We talk about this a lot. It's like, you know, perks that make a bespoke, interesting difference are very cool. So there's a lot, like the perks, a lot of good ones.
Changed your play style.
I'll tell you my least favorite one is when you get hit, you get teleported. Is not great. And maybe that can be stacked with like some other effects that like make it better. But it's like you can't ever finish a fight, like practically. And you will sometimes be electrified and then teleported into a body of water and die instantly. And it's not good. It was almost as bad as that one curse from Monolith. That's not what it's called. Star of Providence. Where it's like you take damage from like hitting walls. Tyler, did you have a favorite perk?
Well, I think my sense of perks was so skewed because like I got the unlimited spells one on my first run, and I'm like, oh man, the perks in this game are awesome. second run, you know, not damaged by poison. I'm like, oh man, these perks are so great. And then and then they get more and more like, oh yeah, the don't skip leg day one was great. I mean, I like unlimited spells because it's pure hacks.
pure hacks and magic. Yeah, there's a ton of perks. Sometimes it is pretty disappointing, and it happens, I feel like, fairly regularly, where you get to the Holy Mountain and like the perk selection is crap. You can reroll the perks, but in early in the run, it's pretty cost prohibitive.
Yeah, like it's 200 gold where, you know, if you're done with the first level, you have like 300, 500 gold. So
yeah, and I think that there's some like high level metagamey stuff about perks and things that like if you are able to like if you want, how much, depending on how much you want to anger the gods, if you are like drilling your way out of Holy Mountains to go back to previous levels, and if you have like a perk that's like, oh, like I can like pick up more perks from before, I think like you can go back to previous levels and like collect more perks that way.
Oh,
so there's all sorts of wild nonsense you can get into this game once, like, I feel like the crucial aspects are you need something to do like high DPS or like clear out something to like clear out enemies, and like digging is like an unstated like crucial part of this game where like it just offers you such like good movement through sticky situations. That if you don't have something to dig or like teleport or like otherwise move yourself to another area, then you kind of feel boxed in. And then on top of that, like, you know, being able to go back to previous sections, which I think this is kind of hinted at from the snowy depths with the big chasm, kind of giving you a gameplay hint of like, hey, like you should maybe go back and explore stuff if you can, wink, wink. So I think that there's ways to kind of like bank off of those previous perks and go and explore other areas as well, which I think is encouraged. I just wish those other areas were maybe a little easier to get at as opposed to getting some crazy overpowered digging one, having to like traverse half of the map to get to the pyramid or the things under the pyramid or stuff that's like 2 kilometers up in the sky.
Yeah. There's some weird stuff on this map that you posted, Scott.
Yeah.
Some curious business happening in this game. Indeed, indeed.
Well, plenty to explore before very likely revisiting it at the end of the year for the Omega Bowl. But we'll have to see if any other indie tough as nails pixelated platformers come up to kind of steal Noita's spot. I have one in the hopper that it'll be curious to see if it's tougher or more straightforward than Noita, but we'll have to see when we cross that Rubicon, that flaming the lava lake of that game once we get to it. But do we have any other things we want to talk about Noita before we get to the rankings zone, the rankings biome?
I had a question. So at the beginning of the game, at the end of the beginning of every run, there is a like a mine cart and then a hill, and you can like kick the mine cart down the hill and ride it down if you're successful. Like I spent so much time in the mines that I started to get superstitious, like thinking, oh, if I ride the mine, ride the cart down the hill, does this change my run somehow? Like, am I like, is it harder? Did anybody find any special bonuses for that, or is that just purely like aesthetic?
I think it's got to be aesthetic. There are some kinds of like biomodifiers that will pop up. I don't think it's dependent.
It's humid here. It's dark here or something.
Yeah, I don't think those are dependent on how cool you can surf the minecart, though.
Well, guess what, Tyler? I didn't find anything with the minecart. I think it's mostly there just to kind of teach you how to use kick and whatnot. However, great minds think alike. A lot of other people have thought the same thing, and there is a mod to turn that cart into a skateboard. That's pretty cool. So that's quite the run modifier.
And you skated around in the mines?
I just heard this from a friend. I didn't go and install it. I did install the Warhammer like Space Marine mod, which makes the game way too easy, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Should be noted.
The Noida 40K mod, I just have a bullet point underneath that saying LOL.
You have been conquered in the name of the Emperor.
Yeah. The mod scene for this game is pretty insane. There's like 1,500 of them on the Steam Workshop. They will disable your achievements, but I don't know how much people really care about that. But some that are like kind of great are the Edit Wand Always mod of just being able to like edit your wand whenever, wherever. There's some popular ones like health containers, like enemies have a chance to drop health containers. There's one that will spawn a rare chunk. So like all the procedurally generated biomes are kind of like stapled together chunks, prefab chunks. One of the chunks to be an Anvil of Destiny is the mod that allows you to like combine wands and like almost kind of like a wand breeding system in a way. You combine like wands with potions and things. One that I think is a good accessibility one if you're like just starting out and you're like, oh man, I don't want to get good at like laser sighting these dudes, is the Starting Homing Wand. That just makes your starting wand have the always cast homing spell on it, which is like, it feels like a good stopgap for like making the early game a little easier. So that way you can just kind of like breeze through and like not get bludgeoned by these like creepies and getting shotgunned to death. But like eventually you'll be replacing that wand with something anyway. So you'll be like, all right, I don't really need this, but it does help kind of like smooth over that early game curve some. I found that one to be quite useful. There's a mini map mod. There's one that has more shop options. A Dead Isn't Dead mod where you checkpoint at the Holy Mountains. So when you die, you just go back to the reroll zone. An auto gold collector, I think, would be quite nice. No gold despawns. There's one that just adds all of the items from the Risk of Rain games as an item collection.
Excellent.
There's one that allows you to like pick a perk at the start of the game, which I think is an interesting one.
Most of these are just like make the game a little easier.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of accessibility ones. There's one, the Entangled Worlds co-op mod. If you give that one a Google, that is just a straight up multiplayer mod. There's like a straight up multiplayer for this game. I don't know how on earth they got it to work, but you know,
like a multiplayer type of game.
Like it's bad enough having to dodge my own gigadisc projectiles flying back at me.
Saw blade catch.
you jest, but there is a PvP mod as well.
That's pretty cool.
And I don't know how quote ironic it is of a scene, but like a growing question mark scene of Noida PvP multiplayer. Noida esports, not something I thought I would ever have to say, but yeah, the mod scene is pretty wild. There's one that adds like 300 new enemies and bosses if you really wanted more bosses to get picked apart by. There's basically, this is one of those games where like anything that you can think of, there's a mod for it and probably worth checking out.
Well, should we get into rankings?
Is it finally that time for rankings? I guess with the whenever we have special guests on the show, I like to let them have the last word, but maybe before we do that, we'll go and ending on a high note mode. Andrew, why don't we have you kick us off? Kick that minecart of ratings down the hole.
I've been adjusting things on the fly, which is something Noida does not let you do unless you get the perk to modify ones in the field. All right. So basically, I'm very torn about this game. I think it really shoots itself in the foot by not offering a little more in the way of descriptions, a little more in the way of a practice room, a built-in spell lab type thing. There's also a lot of, I found on the internet, on Reddit and whatnot, a lot of like, I guess they're fun, like secret uses of spells, but some of those are frustrating. It's like, well, how would anybody guess that? How would anybody figure that? But anyway, I digress. Initially, I gave it a higher ranking, but then I noticed on my list that I had, the entire time I was playing this game, I, of course, was comparing it in my brain space to Rift Wizard. And I'm like, oh, Rift Wizard. Now, that was a fun time. Fun the entire time, and not like this horrible bell curve of doom. But then I noticed, oh, wait, I have ranked Noida way above Rift Wizard. I'm like, that cannot stand. So then I put it below Rift Wizard. I'm like, well, that doesn't really feel great. And so I was kind of, I don't know, trying to balance it between, like, you know, my personal opinion versus like what I think is like subject, like objectively a better game. Bottom line is I split the difference, and Noida scores 7.08 points on my scale, ranking system, my rating system. I think it might be worth the frustration to try to learn this game and play it. I think it's rewarding enough. I'm pretty sure. I mentioned previously that, hey, you know, Finland, highest per capita number of metal bands in the country. And I was told by the great frontman Jon, frontman of Korpiklaani, folk metal legends. I asked him, why do you think that is? Why do you think it's the most metal bands per capita? And he said, well, you know, in Finland, it is dark for a great period of the year. And there's, you know, not a lot to do during that time. And you need to make the best of it, you know, while you're living under that shadow, and making music is a great way to do it. And you may as well make some heavy, some metal music, something intense. And Noida definitely is intense in some ways that are really appealing and some ways that are not. And it's not for everybody, not unlike the metal music genre, which actually, no, metal is for everybody. You just got to get good. So 7.08 points, for me.
Colin.
I'm going to roll in with an 8.0. I didn't get to play this game quite as much as I wanted to. I was out skiing pretty much all of last week. So unlike Scott, I do not have a Steam Deck, so I was not able to play it on the plane. But from the amount I've played, I really like the physics simulator as game. I think they do a really good job of integrating it in to like having it be a very dynamic system when you're running around and things are exploding. I love when you run around and you could just hear things exploding off in the distance. You're like, I haven't even interacted with this part, and seeing they're already killing each other down there, throwing bombs at you know, like the little monsters, sometimes they fight each other. And there's like, oh, they set part of the mine on fire. So it feels kind of like it's a little bit of a living world. And it feels like everything is truly interacting. Like it's not a static map. That appeals to me a lot, just aesthetically. I really like the pixel art, the way that it looks. Even if it didn't have all the dynamic stuff that uses pixels as the actual building blocks of the world, I like the way that it represents everything. I think the biggest drawback for me was just it was hard to learn how to do everything. And so, like, if you pick up a wand, you don't really know what it does, and you pause to look at it, you're not actually paused, so you can die in that menu. I feel like that's an easy loss from them. So some of the confusion, but overall I like it a lot. I plan on playing more of it, so I can get the full Noida experience.
Full Metal Noida. I guess I'll go next, and we'll have Tyler bring us home here. Noida is gonna rank pretty high for me. A 9.4 ties it with Dead Cells and Risk of Rain 2, just ahead of Risk of Rain 1 and Slay the Spire. I think like this game just has like Scott Game written all over it, and I think that like the biggest criticism I have for it is the learning curve. Feels like it doesn't need to be as difficult as it is. I think like the difficulty of the game is fine, but like teaching like the crucial spell like editing mechanic is not very well done, and I feel like there's a missed opportunity at the beginning to have that kind of like teaching moment of like, here's how this really complicated system works. I like that it is super complicated. I just wish there was a little bit better of an on-ramp. I think Noida has a really amazing aesthetic and like the sense of wonder about it. It feels very magical, like magic with a K. that like it feels otherworldly. It feels very unique and alien. And I just want to explore every little corner of it and experiment with every little thing in it. And it a lot of these games, you know, you go on like a 30, 45 minute run, you die, and you're like, well, that's a bummer. I didn't really anticipate that. I'll pick this up tomorrow and see what nonsense I can get up to. With Noida, I'm very much in that one more turn loop of I'm dead, I immediately have to start a new game and see what wild nonsense I can get up to. It has that extreme draw of I need to stay up past my bedtime to play this game because I have to see what other crazy thing is around this other corner that I haven't explored yet. I love the mod scene. The community for this game is super, super active and interesting to spy on and see all of these wand arsenals that the Noida Discord is putting together. I'm just like, wow, this game has quite a lot going for it. So pretty high for me. I was very glad there's a listener request episode. I was very happy that listeners had requested this one. We were going to get to it eventually, but I'm glad that, you know, people had written in to say, you guys got to cover Noida. I'm like, okay, you convinced me. Hard sell. I guess that leaves us with Tyler. Tyler, bring us home on your thoughts for Noida, your number one game of the Grog Pod that you've played. What are your thoughts?
So I already kind of hit on my kind of big frustrations with it early on, that it doesn't really respect your time. So you can't rush through a floor. You have to kind of crawl through it and accumulate wands. Be careful, don't die. And so if you die to something that is completely random, like you get teleported into a vat of acid, or you accidentally touch a like an orange pixel and get caught on fire, and all you have is an acid potion to put it out. That all kind of felt very frustrating to me. And I kind of peeked at like the general feedback about this game before I started playing it. And, you know, the common joke is, it's just a physics. It's more of a physics simulator than a game. I kind of wrote that off when I read that. And then as I started playing it more and discovered like the Spell Lab mod and stuff like that, where you're kind of taking away the progression of the game to interact with it more as a physics engine. Like, you know, you can create a wand and spawn a bunch of black holes and watch the very impressive physics engine work. Like, you know, the black hole starts vibrating, and then all the pixels around it start vibrating, and the bricks start to shear into clean lines and like slowly crumble apart as it's not just a pre-baked animation. It's actually like the pixel physics. Very cool to watch. And being able to create custom wands and jump through the levels and stuff like that, and just shred things mindlessly. Just more interacting with it as a physics simulator than a game itself made the game a lot more enjoyable to me. So leaning into the physics aspect of it is kind of saved the game for me, or at least brought it up above a 5. Like the lack of story and narration didn't really bother me that much. I kind of dug the oppressive solitude, souls-like experience of it. I don't know what any of this stuff is. I don't care. I'm trying to survive every round. I'm just trying to survive and get gold, I guess. I probably I don't have like relative rankings for things on this podcast because it's my first episode on here, but so I don't know what I'd put it above or below. I just know that I would give it a six, a solid 6.0.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of curious what are sort of your top three or so rogue games that you've already played?
Hades, definitely. Followed by Hades 2, I have a problem. And then maybe like Dungeons of Dreadmoor, or actually, I think my number one would be FTL now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, FTL's good.
Before we sign off, this was a hard game to find similar games for, because this is such a wild and unique experience. But I think there's a few games that are not rogues that are kind of similar-ish. Andrew, I think you had mentioned Soldat, which the more I'd looked at, I'm like, yeah, I could kind of see that. There's another game that's sort of like a very Finnish Worms-like called Liero, L-I-E-R-O, which is like a free-to-play multiplayer combat arena with destructible terrain. There's a game Rain World, which is it's not quite a rogue game, but it's a very systems-driven environmental, like the environment is like happening all around you.
Rain World's very cool.
Yeah, it's as unique and weird as Noida is. For rogue games, like I feel like Risk of Rain 1 and 2 are like aesthetically similar enough that like there's just wild nonsense happening all the time, crazy synergies, chunky pixel art from the first one, Risk of Rain Returns, I guess, also. Streets of Rogue is also very like wild and like systems driven, where like who knows what's going to happen this run, like zombies could, you know, take over the city kind of deal. Andrew had mentioned Rift Wizard, and I'm like, you know what, there's like a disturbing like amount of similarity between Noida and Rift Wizard the more that I thought about it, including the purple rifts at the bottom of the biome in Noida. I'm like, there might be something on here. Cube Chaos is a game that I think is similar from the aspect of like the sequential like linked list wand programming language. Maybe I haven't dabbled with it a whole lot. It has Colin Gayton written all over it.
What was that? Cube Chaos.
This is a game that like it's like a borderline auto battler between like you on one side, enemy on the other side, and you're kind of like queuing up action sequences, I believe, in a similar Noida fashion to how the wand programming is. I'm pretty sure. And then the last one on here, Tyler, you'd mentioned Dungeons of Dreadmoor. I feel like from the traditional like 90s roguelike into the spectrum, NetHack is somewhat similar to Noida in the sense of like wild nonsense, giant, like totally obtuse world with like way too much to explore, and what's this thing? I should experiment with it, and then being insta-gibbed by a poison potion that you know next time not to mess with it. I feel like in those capacities, NetHack is similar. But yeah, gosh, the Noida is such a unique thing that it's hard to find similar things for. So as we wind down here, if you want to write in for our next listener request episode, send those requests in grogpodzone@gmail.com. The website, grogpod.zone, the contact tab up there is a little Google form. People submit stuff into the Google form still for what games we should check out next. And our Mastodon, grogpod.gamedev.place. Tyler, like, you're the special guest of the day here. Do you have anything you'd want to plug while you're here?
Nope. Just call your mom.
Always good advice. So I think that's gonna finally wrap. We're gonna douse this episode with some worm blood here, and wind us down from Noida. Will isn't here to tease our next episode, but he has picked a very interesting one. Dysomancer is our next game that we're playing. A very interesting card driven looks like a spire like on the surface, but imagine if you had the willpower to roll the dice and change any number on the screen based on the dice roll. What would you change? Dysomancer. So keep an eye out for that for next time. But to play out this episode will be some psychedelic tunes for eating shrooms and dousing your flaming robes in blood, too.